Big fatty girls, boys, and everyone in between. Welcome back to Antics with Ash. Today, I'm really excited. Okay, so we have Lala, who is a dating educator. She's mysterious. She's anonymous. Welcome, Lala.
Hello.
Hi, darling. How are you?
Everyone's just hearing my voice now and not seeing me. So I know that for some people, that's going to be like a weird situation.
Yeah.
But they've just got to deal with it. Pretend you're listening to the radio.
Agreed.
Stare at Ash.
Get with the program. It's a podcast, all right? So, okay, on that note, I want to know, why is it that you choose to remain anonymous in your line of work?
So I started out just writing a blog.
Okay.
I didn't expect anything. I didn't go into this thinking I want a big social media presence or anything like that. But I needed to set up an Instagram so that people would read my blog.
Right.
But I was only writing a blog to just like get shit off my chest. I felt like I had some stuff that I could tell women that
right.
I really wanted them to know.
Was it almost like you were just like, I want to put my own like personal journal in a way, just out?
Literally.
Right.
So I'd had all these shit experiences with men, fuck boy after fuck boy after fuck boy. And then I had like the fuck boy that broke the camel's back and I suddenly had all these epiphanies.
Right.
And I was like, oh fuck, I can see where I've been going wrong. I can see through their behaviours.
Yeah.
I want to tell every woman.
Mm-hmm.
So I started writing these blogs and so I created the Insta to go along with it. And at the time, I was also working as a social worker. So I was in child protection.
So there needed to be an element of, yeah.
I couldn't do the two at the same time. So I started it off anonymously, didn't expect it to go anywhere, but it did. And I've stayed anonymous because I just don't want to be famous.
Good for you.
I want to be able to talk about the stuff that I talk about without exposing myself or other people.
Yeah.
So
I could only strive to be this mysterious, by the way, as in all I want is to be like a cool, mysterious girl, but I just talk too much shit. But you have hacked the matrix because you talk shit.
I do.
But anonymously.
Yeah.
So much better. So much better. Do you find that doing this... Because obviously you acquire like a certain amount of, I guess, like wisdom as the years go on doing what you do, right? Being like an educator and hearing all these stories and learning from all these experiences. Do you find that it makes it harder for you to date? Because
oh, yeah.
you almost have, because me and my best mate talk about this all the time. I say that like when I was 18, I feel like, The pool that I was looking at was like this big because I didn't know like who the fuck I was, what I wanted. But then as you kind of get older and you gain a bit of wisdom and you date more and you know what you want and don't want, I just feel like the pool has gone...
Babe, wait until you're in your 40s.
Oh.
There's like one available man for us all to share. Like,
yeah, in it. So what the fuck are we meant to do?
Well, but I think it can only be a good thing. And that's not true. And I think we'll get into that later. But, you know, there are always going to be options for people for you to love and for you to date. But that is a great thing that you described, which is that when you're 18, you don't know what the fuck's going on.
Yeah, yeah.
You are naive. And that's apologies to any 18-year-olds listening.
Yeah.
You know, respect to you.
Us, you know nothing, John Snow.
But in a couple of years, you'll know exactly what we're saying.
Yeah.
And you don't know anything. And actually, if you look back at the people that you would have dated when you were in your early teens, you wouldn't touch them with a barge pole.
Oh, my God. As in, imagine Ocean Beach, Ibiza. And just every man there was my type at 18. And now, like, that makes me sick
absolute
to the core.
Yeah. Me too.
Oh, God.
So, but that's all it is. It's standards raising. And actually, if your standards raise to such a point that you're like, well, I'm going to be single for the rest of my life, fine.
I was going to say, like, is that an issue? Because obviously... doing what you do, you must, like, your standards must just be here because your whole, like, work and what you do every day is understanding what is right for you and what makes sense and this, that and the other. So then it's like, have you ever got to a point where you're just like, fucking hell, well, I'll just be single then forever?
Do you know what the difficult thing is that the work I do makes me hold myself accountable. So because I'm out here telling people constantly run from this red flag or that's, you know, don't do that to yourself, love yourself or whatever.
Yeah.
Sometimes I will put myself into situations that I would absolutely be recommending everybody in the world not to get involved
in. Yeah.
And then when I'm about, you know, like, so there's, even like while I've been, la la la, let me explain, while I've been doing this job, I have encountered situations and men are not up to standards, that are waving big red flags that would be so embarrassing if any of my audience saw what I was doing.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes it's only that that makes me come back from it. Sometimes it's literally like, what are you doing?
Right.
If anyone found out about this, they would never
listen. And then you're like, thank God I do what I do because it's the only thing to pull me back.
Yeah.
I mean, at the end of the day, we're only fucking human. Like, dick sand is dick sand. It really is. Do you know what I mean? Like, you sometimes it is, you can't get yourself out. It's just it's potent.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. It's difficult. And I talk about something called limerence all the time, which you may or may not have heard of. But that is very much like the dick sand. So I'm a limerent person. I don't know if you are or not. But what it means is some people just fall in love normally.
Mm-hmm.
They're really relaxed. You know, they meet someone, they're very secure about it. They just date like normal people and fall in love slowly.
Or you're a psychopath.
Me and anyone who has limerence is like, I've met this person. I can see that they're going to ruin my life and I cannot stop fucking thinking about them. I'm obsessed by them. If I heard a song playing when they got in my car, I'm not going to be obsessed with that song and play it
over
and over again. Like, limerence is, it's like a crush on steroids. Well, maybe you're a limerent person.
I'm just passionate. What? Yeah.
So limerence is that infatuation.
Okay.
You know? So like you say, that dick sand. If you are someone who gets, and it could be pussy sand too.
Yeah.
But if you're someone
who
gets caught up in that, like, when I'm seeing someone, this becomes my whole world.
Okay.
I can't think about anything else. I can't do anything else. Then that's limerence.
You see, weirdly, me dating, I found that I'm actually, like, don't get me wrong, I'm a lover girl if it's, like, reciprocated in the right way. But I actually date like a bit of a man, as in, and I've been told that by my exes as well, this, like, hyper-independence a bit.
Avoidant, would you say?
1,000,000%.
So have you looked into your attachment styles?
No, but I'm definitely avoidant in many ways.
Right.
I don't, like, what are the attachments? How many are there? Is it, like, the same, are there loads? Is it the same as love languages where there's, like, a core, like, five?
Well, so love languages, I did a podcast about why they're a bit shit, but...
I agree. I actually completely agree because I don't... No one person is one love language. I think you're, like, a culmination of lots, right?
Yeah, and also, I mean, I think there's something to be said about the love languages in that actually, if you do identify, this is how I like to be loved,
right?
But actually, how my partner likes to be loved is different. So if I love getting gifts,
right,
and I'm just showering my partner with gifts, but actually they don't respond to that, what they need is affirmation,
yeah,
then that can help you to think about things. But actually, if you read the love languages book, first of all, it was written by a man who's just not qualified. He's just made up these
it's written
things.
By a man.
Yeah, a fundamentalist, homophobic Christian pastor.
Oh, throw the love languages down the loo.
He said that the love languages do not apply to gay relationships, so how can that even work? Yeah.
That's my worst nightmare. Are you joking?
And also, a lot of... If you actually read the book, there's loads of shit in there, like, this woman is basically coming to him, the writer of the book, to say, like, my husband's abusive, he's, like, physically abusing, shouting all the time.
Right.
And then the man, the love languages man, is like, well, what's his love language? And it must be physical touch. So to stop him doing all this, you must just be available to him sexually whenever you need. And then, of course, your relationship is going to be fine because, of course, your husband's being horrible to you if you're not meeting his physical
Your standards.
Yeah.
Are you joking?
So the whole book, if you actually explore it, like, so I can see why it's taken off. I can see why people are like, love languages
help
me.
Because I guess, also, like, the principles of it, I can understand why that would apply
exactly.
to dating. But, like,
if you break it all down,
God, I
it's
didn't
actually
know
really,
that.
Really toxic.
God, that's insane.
Yeah. But so attachment styles are something different. Your attachment style is actually developed in your early years. So, for example, if you are parented by someone or by a group of people who are constantly meeting your needs, so you cry, you get food.
Right.
You cry, you get a cuddle. You cry, your mum's going to come running or your dad or whatever. Other people are parented in different ways.
Mm-hmm.
So if I cry, my parent is going to tell me to fix up. Stop being silly, don't be emotional. other people are parented in ways that they know that their needs will only be met if they're pleasing their parents, yeah. for example. So if I'm doing really well at tennis or doing really well at football or whatever, then my parents are there for me. Right. But when I am feeling sad and emotional and in need of something,
they're not gonna
be there. So we develop our attachment styles based on how we attach to, how we learn to attach to our early
caregivers. It's insane, isn't it? Yeah.
So if you're a kid who knows, my needs are going to be met by people all the time, you are going to develop a secure attachment. You're going to know that love is available in this world, care is available to you in this world, and I can go out there into relationships and have my needs met and meet people's needs. I'm secure.
Yeah.
If you're parented by one of these people who isn't coming to you when you cry,
1,000,000%,
or isn't there for you as a child for your emotional needs, then you might develop an insecure attachment.
Right.
So an insecure attachment is then broken down into some people are anxious, some people are avoidant, some people are fearful. So if you had a very abusive childhood, and it's not only that your needs weren't being met, but say when you were crying, you were getting a smack, you might develop a fearful attachment style, which means that when you're going into your adult relationships in later life, you are... You want love, you want care, but you're afraid
scared,
of it.
Actively scared of it. Yeah.
So you might find it hard to trust people, or you might trust people, but then
it's so sad, isn't it? Because that can manifest in so many different ways. You know, like the classic guy being like, "God, my ex was a psycho," this, that, and the other, and it goes back to all the way back to us as literal kids.
Literally,
like it's so sad, isn't it?
When we label
certain people as certain things, and oh, she's a psychopath. She doesn't trust me. She thinks I'm out doing this and that. And it's like that comes from somewhere. That's not just plucked out of someone's arse.
Exactly.
You know,
which is why therapy is so important.
Yeah.
So it sounds like you've got an avoidant attachment style, which is the opposite to me. So I have an anxious attachment style.
Okay.
My dad left my mom for another woman who was like her best friend.
No.
So when I was a little girl, to me, I wasn't good enough to keep that man.
Right.
He left my mom. He left me for another woman. Mm-hmm. She was better than me as a little girl. So then I grew up very... going into relationships with men very much being like, I need you to love me, and if you don't stick around for me, then what can I'm nothing without you.
Right.
You know, please stay. And any change in their behaviour or any sense of rejection, I'd be like, you know, whereas an avoidant is what it sounds like you are, or maybe someone who didn't have, abandoned by parents or whatever.
And no, that's exactly it. I 1,000,000% know it's from that. Yeah.
I'm suffocated when you show me too much love because this love doesn't feel familiar.
Yeah, so it's weird though, you know, because sometimes I feel like I mirror a lot. So I do this thing, and like a lot of exes have said, like, oh, you're so hyper independent, which to me makes so much sense with my upbringing because my mum left when I was 13.
Right.
And then I haven't seen her since.
Oh, my
God. So I was very much, like, from 13, like, okay, well, we're doing this. I need to, like, be the woman of the house, essentially, which I was from, like, quite young.
Mm.
So to me, it makes so much sense that that would manifest in that way in my love life because...
Oh, absolutely.
I'm almost like, okay, it's all well and good having a guy that you head over heels for, but if they leave... you're going to be fine. So, like, I always have that little bit of, like, yeah, but I'll be fine on my own because I've done it. So, like, you know, if I feel someone's kind of slipping back, I'll go, like, full hyper-independent.
Mm-hmm.
I'll be like, all right, who cares? And then I'll kind of just start avoiding.
Yeah.
If I feel them slipping away even slightly, it's probably not the best way to, like... Obviously, in relationships, I guess there's an element of you're not always going to be in the honeymoon phase. So there's this thing of, you know, you're going to have peaks and troughs and whatever. So it's probably a bad thing on my part that the minute I feel things getting, I go, oh, going to leave that, almost before they do it to me.
Well, that's absolute self-defense.
Yeah.
Self-protection. But what happens if they're really keen? If someone's really into you and really onto you, does that make you start avoiding?
No, then I go full, like... love a girl in.
Right.
But I have to feel that they're on that same... Yeah, it's really weird.
Well, I actually think what you're saying sounds quite healthy.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Yay!
I do.
Okay, great.
I do. Although, I mean, at that point where you start perceiving something and then you're like, well, fuck this.
Yeah.
It would probably be healthy to communicate.
Agreed.
And make sure that that's not just perception.
Yeah.
You know? But actually, I think that's right. I think that's the place where we all want to get to, because when I feel things change, I've got ADHD as well, so I've very bad rejection sensitivity disorder, not disorder, dysphoria, I think they call it. So if
is
I feel...
something that's like adjacent to ADHD?
Oh, then? Yeah, massive.
No way, I didn't know that.
ADHD trait. So, right. And I get it with, like, friends and stuff as well. Or even, like, say you were texting me to do this show. If you said something slightly offish, I might start thinking, she doesn't like me.
Really?
She thinks I'm going to be the worst guest that she's ever had on her show. And she's trying to make me not come there, you know. Because and then I have to talk myself through it. So you're being an idiot.
Right.
But it's a combination of things, because I'm ADHD and was abandoned by a dad.
Right.
You've got ADHD and were abandoned by a mum. That's going to give you such
a completely different, yeah.
And you've responded differently to it to me as well. So my abandonment, I'm like, everyone must love me and never leave me. You're like, nah, fuck you all.
Yes. Right.
So that's, our attachment styles are completely different.
It's so mad how differently it goes, because I've had like multiple exes basically say to me, I almost feel like I may as well not, I'm not needed. And obviously it's that thing of like, men do innately want to feel needed, because they have this desire to be like, well, I'm the man, I'm this macho, I want to like feel like a provider. And I've always been like, yeah, but mate, you can fuck off at any time. So like, I'm not really looking to you for that.
Does that make them fall in love with you though? Because I always find that I want to be more like you, because I think what sometimes puts men off is that sense that I need them too much.
Really? This is so funny, because then you want like a sprinkle of me and I want a sprinkle of you.
Yeah.
Because I find that they don't feel needed at all with me. And then they're like, I kind of want a girl to just be at my feet a bit, you know? Yeah. Like, and I don't give them that enough. Me and my best mate talk about this all the time. She was saying that, like, she basically said she adjusted the way that she is when she is with men, and she said it completely changed the game for her. And I said, what do you mean? And she was like, honestly, they want to feel needed. And she's also quite, like, a hyper-independent girly. And she was like, there were times when I didn't need help with anything, but I thought, let me just make him feel wanted, or make him feel a bit macho. And she'd be like, oh God, I can't, can you help me with that?
See, I do this really works in the early
days. And I said, I can't believe
can
that
you put
works.
A picture up.
Yeah.
Oh, you act like a complete fucking moron.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I can't put my socials
which, Lala,
together.
I can't bear.
Yeah.
And like, to me, that goes against everything that I am as like an independent girl. But I'm like, it does work. Maybe I just need to be a bit like, oh God, I literally can't do a thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's so interesting. But she said that ever since she started doing that, she felt, and I've never known anything like it with her, boys just fall in love with her. Like, completely.
Yeah.
And I'm like, God, you've just hacked it. But she's got the right balance of it. And I think that's what the key is.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. God, it's so interesting.
Yeah. It's all very complicated. And I don't think people give enough credit to, like, people are always asking, like, oh, why is this happening? Why is that? Have you looked at you and what you're bringing to this? Have you looked at what your past and your childhood and your previous relationship are bringing to everything that you're doing now?
Yeah.
And until you do,
yeah,
then you're going to just be repeating the same fucking patterns, doing the same shit. But like,
we're literally like a product. We are a product of our past, aren't we, essentially?
Yeah.
So, like, all you're doing, I think, like, throughout, especially dating, half the time you're unlearning just shit habits.
Yeah.
Aren't you? Just like the whole time you're dating.
Yeah.
God, I love it.
So I'm actually going to write my next book all about limerence, because I've been talking about
which, by the way, guys.
Oh, this is my first
book. This is the first one, which Lala has very kindly gifted me. I'm going to get balls deep in this tonight the minute I get in, because all I do is talk about, I talk about dating so much on this pod, so like, I love it.
Oh,
I'm
that'll
really
help you.
Excited.
There's loads of stuff about attachment styles in there as well.
Yes.
So it will help you to figure out what yours definitely is.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, limerence, I mean, it's a psychological term for falling in love in an infatuated way, or maybe not even falling in love, but it's the way that we approach dating. And if you are, it doesn't sound, I don't think you're a limerent person.
Okay.
I think you just date normally. So.
But then sometimes I'm limerent in my head.
Yeah.
But just, I'll be damned if I let the person know that I'm
I will never let them know. I will never let them know.
You're just...
I mean, back in the day, I used to be an absolute fucking clown. And I talk about this a lot on my podcast. And like, I would actually, you know, like if I had... Because limerence can be with someone who you've never even... Like, you could get limerence for the guy who works in the local cafe.
Okay.
And you walk past every day and you're like, I'm increasingly becoming like obsessed with this person. And then you're going to do stupid things like make sure you work all day in that calf, and then you know, if you know his day off is on a Thursday, you just won't bother going in, but you'll be there every other fucking
right
so, and I think limerence is something that often starts when we have our first like teenage crushes.
Okay.
You know, you'll do stupid things when you're a teenager, like skateboard past his house or whatever, like
yeah.
Not me, I wasn't skateboarding, but you know that kind of, that kind of shit. So limerence is that kind of whole infatuation. But as an adult, when you are dating with limerence, you have to learn not to allow people to know that you are limerent for them.
Right.
Because I think that that's really scary and it can, like, put people off.
Also, I guess, like, for people whose intentions aren't the best with you, that just creates this element of, like, taking advantage, because it's almost like knowing that you're so readily available and so there to do whatever they say, basically. It's like the wrong person will just take that for granted and be like, well, let me see what I can squeeze out of this person because they are just so infatuated by me.
Yeah, and that kind of, the thing with limerence is so fucking complicated because it can switch off like that, but it can also last for a really long time. Mm-hmm. And you can have two people who are limerent coming together, so you could be equally infatuated. The person could be equally infatuated with you. If you both have limerence together and you're both just on it and really into each other, then that can actually turn into a healthy relationship.
Right.
You can actually just move into a part where it's like, oh, feelings are reciprocated.
Mm-hmm.
I don't need to be so intensely infatuated because this is where I want it to be. We can keep it moving. The problem with limerence is if the other person isn't matching your feelings.
Mm-hmm.
So that can then feel like really intense because you are having to like hide because you want to fucking talk to them all the time.
Right.
You're having to like stop yourself from messaging them and stop them from knowing how obsessed you are with them.
Right, and then you're just not being authentic whatsoever because you're having to hide all these parts of yourself.
Yeah, but the problem is that limerence is not based on actually that person. So I could become limerent with you without knowing fuck all about you.
Right.
I'm obsessed with you. I want to marry you. But I don't know anything. I don't know your attachment style. I don't know your politics. I don't know where you're at intellectually. Mm-hmm. Why am I fucking trying to fall in love with you?
Right.
And so actually that's the good thing about limerence is that sometimes it can just end when you suddenly realise this is a fantasy that I've been obsessing over.
Yeah.
Not actually this person.
It's like having love goggles on, isn't it?
And then the bubble burst.
And then you realise that, oh, it was never about the person.
Exactly.
I just love.
Yeah.
But it just wasn't about the person.
Exactly. If anyone wants to know more about limerence, I've done a whole... My podcasts are only 20 minutes long
because
they're three times a week. But there is a podcast, Understanding
Limerence.
Good for
limerence. You, girl, because fucking hell. Imagine you trying to get me here three times a week. There's absolutely no way.
I only record once a week.
Oh, okay, good. Yeah. Okay, fucking hell, yeah. It's a lot, three a week. Chatty patty all that time.
Yeah, yeah. But listen to my limerence podcast. If you're recognising any of this thing that you're hearing, listen to my limerence podcast. I think it will help listeners.
I love this. Okay, shall we get into some audience participation?
Absolutely.
I'm buzzing for this. So I put a little question box out. I said that Lala was joining us. So we've had a lot of bits flying in. So we're going to answer some questions and get her words of wisdom. All right. Okay. I mean, this one speaks for itself. I want kids. My partner doesn't. I don't know what to do. I really want to be a mum, but he doesn't like children. Please help.
Yeah, don't have kids with him. Do not do it.
Run. Blocker. That there's no point.
No. And if you're thinking, if you can't prioritise yourself and what's going to be best for your own life, think about these hypothetical children who you're potentially going to bring into a life where their dad didn't want them and doesn't like children. Like,
oh my God,
don't do that to them.
I didn't even think of that, actually. That's a really nice way to look at that because I immediately was like, what the fuck are you doing? You're not going to be happy. You're always going to live in this life of sadness if you want kids and he doesn't and then you don't have them. But then I didn't even think of the possibility of having them and then having that person not be present is even worse.
Those poor children.
Yeah, totally.
You know, because then we've got to... So, I mean, what she's saying is, I don't... How did she say how long they've been together or anything like
no.
that?
No.
No. I mean, I think the thing is that it's such a fundamental thing, isn't it? Do you want kids... or not.
And that's like a core thing. It's
at the beginning.
Yeah.
At the beginning. And if someone is saying to you at the beginning of a relationship, I don't like children, I don't want children, don't you sit there opposite them thinking, I'm going to change that eventually.
Yeah, yeah.
You're going to be my baby father. No.
Yeah.
You need to see that right at the beginning and go, actually, long term, we're not a match.
Yeah.
We want different things. Never in this situation ever try to just sneak it in like, oh, well, if I get pregnant, what can he do? The kids are born, you know what I mean?
Well, this is another thing, because what's your thoughts on that? Because I hear loads of people talking about baby trapping and then what that means eventually for the people. And, like, I've always been of the mindset of... It's so hard, right? Because one, it takes two to tango. If you're not wrapping yourself up, then as a man, you are giving yourself... the possibility of having kids with someone.
Yeah.
And that's on you.
Yeah.
But at the same time, I find it difficult when people have explicitly had the conversation with the man and been like, do you want kids? They've said categorically no. They get pregnant and then are upset when that person doesn't want to be involved. And don't get me wrong, I don't think it's right that you would have a child just roaming about in this world and you don't have anything to do with it. But also... on the woman part, I'm kind of like, where are your expectations though? Because what did you think? Like, he was all of a sudden gonna, you know, I think people think, oh, by the time the baby's here, well, he'll love it.
Yeah.
You know?
And I think that is a really important message to give to women. First of all, I don't believe you can trap anyone into having a baby. I have a son.
Yeah.
And he needs to know, if you are putting your penis in a woman, I don't care if she's told you she's on the pill.
Yeah.
I don't care if she's told you she doesn't even have a fucking womb.
Yeah.
If you are putting your penis inside her without a condom,
then that's
on you.
Don't care
if she says what type of contraception she's on, you have taken responsibility for that pregnancy. Don't come to me with anything else. I am that fucking kid's grandma.
Yeah.
No man can say she trapped me.
You're right.
Hold you down and extract your sperm. No, you voluntarily put your dick in there. You are 100% responsible, 50-50 responsible. But I also think that women, for their own sake, not for the man's sake, but for their own sakes, need to listen to what, if a man tells you he doesn't want to have a child with you, do not put yourself through that.
Yeah.
Because single parenthood is shit. We can make it work. We can make it thrive. We can do our best.
Yeah.
Single mums can be amazing or single dads, but it's not the
ideal. It's hard,
for anyone. And you will be potentially putting yourself into the shittest, most regrettable situation of your life. Because that man can walk away. Might make him morally indecent, might make him a massive but he can still do it.
But he can still do it.
He can go off and be a and you are then burdened, and it is a burden. People will be like, every child is a miracle. Yeah, there might be a miracle, there might be a blessing, but it's still not a blessing at 4 o'clock in the morning when you're being woken up for the fifth time that night by the baby and you're doing it on your own. So do not put yourself
through
that.
I always think that that's a whole life.
Yeah.
That's you are locked in for the rest of your life.
Yeah.
And you're responsible for a whole being.
Yeah.
Like, I always think this and I'm like, God, it's such a huge decision. And then for someone to explicitly say no and then you kind of be like, what? Like, you're such a shit person for not being involved. And, like, people are shit.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
People are just shit. You have to take their word for it that they don't want it.
Protect yourself.
Yeah.
You are way better off never having children in your whole life than you are having children with the wrong person and then raising kids who are going to need a ton of therapy, bringing anxiety and stress and shit to your own life that you just never needed to have. Like, leave this relationship with this man and go and find someone who's got the same goals as you.
I agree.
And that's the bottom line of it.
You got this, mama.
Yeah.
So whoever wrote that in, you will find it, trust me. Okay. This lol. Right, I know many of my mates that are like this. Why the fuck do I get the ick after 20 minutes of talking to someone? Right, Lala, I have mates like this, right? Yeah. I'm so not this person. Maybe because I'm a bit kooky and like, I'm a weirdo. So like, yeah. I love people being weird and authentically. That nothing gives me the ick, to the point where probably more things should give me the ick. Yeah. Like, a guy could be so weird and I'll be like, I love it. But some of my mates are mad with this. As in, they'll be like, I'll be like, what happened? Did you go on your date? Yeah, I don't know. Like, he kind of gave me the ick. Like, it was just like, oh, I don't know. And I'll say, oh, what happened? Oh, I don't know. He was paying for the bill and he got his wallet out of his little wallet holder.
Yeah.
Where do you want him to hold his cards? Like, in his ball sack? I just said, like, what about that? It's like the most... When I say it's like a man breathes and they're like, got the ick. And I'm just like, so what do you expect? Because in my head, that's it, we're doomed, we're going to die alone if these things are giving us the ick.
Yeah, she's getting the ick after 20 minutes with everyone she speaks to, she needs therapy.
Yeah.
She needs to look back to those things we were talking about earlier about childhoods and all of that and try to figure out what is going on right here. There are lots of things that cause the ick. Uh-huh. Potentially, your attachment style might. So if you are an avoidant attachment type of person, then it might be that every time somebody looks like a potential, you then go into shutdown and you're like, don't want this, so I'm going to create an ick in my head.
You know, maybe if you're afraid of commitment, then you're just always going to find an ick.
Well, I think it's either self-sabotage. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to find some of it can be to do with insecurity.
Right.
So I'm going to find something wrong with you before you find something wrong with me. So that if you're about to reject me or you're not going to take my number in the next half an hour or whatever, then I can tell myself, my fragile ego, I can tell them that, oh, it's okay because they've got a disgusting wallet holder anyway.
That's very me, to be fair.
You know?
Like, before you out me, let me just absolutely murk you in my head.
Yeah.
So I don't really care. I'm like, no, they're actually buddies anyway, whatever.
Yeah, exactly. So a bit of that self-protection, self-defense. Sometimes, some people blame the ick on, like, evolutionary psychology type of stuff. So it could be... For women, a lot of the time when we're dating, we may not even realise it. We might be someone, we don't even want children.
Mm-hmm.
But a lot of the time, subconsciously, we're dating with that thing in mind of like, could he be the father of my baby? Even if you're a lesbian, you're still dating with that. Could she be the father of my baby?
Because it's like your primal thing, isn't it? Yeah.
And if we see something... So a lot of women's icks are things like tripping over or him banging his head or whatever. And what we don't realise is that actually somewhere deep, primarily within us, we're going, this man's going to drop our baby on its head. This man is not safe. This man's going to be carrying my child and he's going to trip over and mash it up in the road. Like,
that's so funny.
And we don't even know it.
Right. It's just that subconscious, like really deep, deep buried that you don't even know you're doing it.
Yeah. Because you're dating for a baby forever without knowing.
So if you feel like you're that kind of person that's like, I am just consistently getting the ick at everything. I can't seem to find someone that I actually want to spend time with. Are you just like, therapy.
There is no other option. You need to figure out what's going on because not all of these people
are icky.
Yeah. And also maybe I think you need to sort of like check yourself a little bit.
Yeah.
And grow up, actually, in some ways. Mm-hmm. If it's this extreme that it's like everyone giving me the ick after 20, grow up.
Yeah,
because
agreed.
Also, like, what? Maybe even explore whether there are some levels of narcissism and stuff there within you that are a bit, like, holding people to very high standards that maybe you even...
Like, are you even there? Yeah. God, yeah, that's
true. But
it's
definitely worth exploring yourself rather than just rejecting everybody because you're going to lose out. That
so,
way.
Baby girl... Look in here.
Yes.
Not out there. That's a good one, actually. I feel like so many people are going to be into that one. Okay, next. She blocked me out of nowhere. I thought things were going great. Why do you think she did? So essentially, you talk about this a lot. I was listening to some of your stuff on this. Ghosting, basically. The only 2 pence that I can give on this was I used to think that ghosting was a fantastic way of dealing with things. And I had oh God, Molly, you know, a relationship that wasn't a relationship that lasted way longer than it should have, hell and horror. And essentially, it was just this really, really good guy that was really into me and I was never quite there. And the only way that I thought I could end it, I was just so in my head about it that I just went, and obviously, avoidance, it makes sense. I literally went, I'm just going to have to just ghost.
Oh.
And literally, I remember I had a chat with my mate and she was like, Ash, what you're doing right now is so much worse than letting the person down.
So much worse.
Like that, like purgatory period of him knowing full well this girl is not into me, but he's so into you that doesn't want to leave it. And like, he's just sitting there just questioning himself on everything. Yeah. She was like, you are putting him through hell.
Yeah.
When all he wants is for you to say, it's never going to be it for me.
Because he'll get over that.
You're right.
And we're all grown-ups.
Yeah.
And sometimes you have to hear, this person doesn't want you. Mm-hmm. But once you know that, then you've got the answer to your question.
Right.
You can close that door. You can start moving on yourself. But what ghosting does and what it's done to this guy who's written to you here is it leaves you in this
like
state
panic.
Of horrible anxiety. Like, are they coming back? Is it something I did? You might sit there reading over every message you both ever exchanged with each other to figure out where it went wrong.
Yeah.
Like, you don't know what to do. Do I double text to find out? Like, it leaves you with so much insecurity and anxiety. And I've been there. I've done the same as you before.
Yeah.
I just haven't been able to face delivering that blow.
Yeah.
So I've just been like, well, he'll get the message if I just ignore him.
And but it's not even necessarily.
Me,
I know.
So
and it's not even necessarily because I think my initial thing, if like a mate of mine says, oh, so-and-so ghosted me, your initial thing is to be like, fucking prick.
Yeah.
This, that and the other. And it's half the time it actually comes from a place of, if you're innately a good person, it's not wanting to upset someone. It's not actually because you're horrible. And I remember the whole time I was thinking, I just cannot bear to upset him.
Yeah.
And then the more my mate was like, but you realise that this is 10 times worse.
Yeah.
And I remember he rang me and it had gone quite a while. I think there'd been like a few weeks that I just did not know how to handle the situation. And he sent me a huge message and I knew it was coming. I was like, at some point he's going to message me. And he was basically like, I am so upset that I've basically meant like zero to you. And, you know, I'm sure this is done, obviously, because you just haven't spoken to me, but I'm just letting you know that I have to be rid of this for my own sake. And I remember reading that and I'd kind of just, you know, like I did that real avoidant thing where I was just like out of sight, out of mind, whatever. And I saw this big message and I just went, oh my God, I feel so bad and I'm so horrible. And it was just because I didn't want to upset him.
Mm.
And then we had a conversation on the phone and it was actually so nice. And I was like, I could have done this 4 weeks ago.
Yeah.
We could have had this conversation and we could have saved all of this hell. But I just didn't have the balls.
Yeah.
And that was it. I was like, I said to him, I'm so sorry. This is actually on me.
Yeah.
Like, I just didn't have the bollocks.
That's really good. That's really good that you did that.
Yeah.
You did the right thing. And I think, like, the person that's written in has to just come to that point. I mean, obviously, your situation was solved by the guy writing you a paragraph, and then that made you feel compelled to like give an explanation. I wouldn't be saying to this guy here, write her a big paragraph.
You know, like I
think that if somebody does, she's blocked him on everything.
Mm-hmm.
We don't know the situation.
Mm-hmm.
There is a chance that maybe he's a bit of a scary person and he's scared her and she feels that she has to
block
to keep him safe, to keep herself safe. If that's the case, leave her the fuck alone.
Yeah.
And get some therapy, mate. But also there's a possibility that she is just totally avoidant. She's got the ick or whatever. She's not very emotionally intelligent.
Mm.
She doesn't know how to express herself or communicate. And she just doesn't know.
Yeah.
And actually, what he needs to do is not take that as a reflection of himself.
Right.
Maybe he can look and learn and see if there's anything that he needs to figure out before he goes to next relationships about how he's behaved in this, how he's shown up in this one.
Right.
Is there anything that he could change? But sometimes it's not. It's just we weren't a match for that person. They haven't explained it to us. That's it.
And it's just like, that's it. Be okay with that.
That's it. You don't need, you can't, we can't tell you why she's done that. There could be a billion different reasons why she's chosen that course of action. What you need to focus on is the fact that she has. That's it. She's blocked you. She doesn't want to talk to you. Don't start pursuing it. Don't start turning up at her house. Don't start ringing her off private numbers. Leave it alone.
Yeah.
Block, delete, move on. On to the next, somebody who will appreciate you and value you.
Mic drop. Come on, lover. Okay. Do you think that you should sleep with someone early on to see the sexual compatibility?
I think sexual compatibility is really important.
So do I.
But that's me and you.
Okay.
Everybody's going to have really different priorities in relationships. Mm-hmm. So you, if you were to be asked what your top five things that were important to you, me and you might have sex right at the top.
Right.
Whereas other people will have kindness and generosity at the top, and sex will be right down at the bottom. So whatever is...
God, I could never...
No.
Because to me, that's such a huge part of even, like, my attraction to someone.
Absolutely.
It's like, I've had people that have not necessarily been that attracted to physically, but the sexual compatibility is just so there that the minute it's gone there, I've been like, oh, God, wow.
Yeah.
Like, I'm so into it now. Yeah. Yeah.
It's a really important thing. And actually, again, like we spoke about earlier, talk about if you want to have kids right at the beginning. And I also think with sex, talk about what are your sex drives like?
Right.
What kind of sex do you like? What are you into? Like, I think that kind of stuff is so important to establish early on in a relationship.
Yeah.
But that's because I'm a very sexual person.
Right.
It's not going to be the same for everyone. What I do think about having sex, I wouldn't ever recommend waiting for marriage, but of course I totally understand that people do that for religious reasons.
Right.
If you're doing it for religious reasons, great, I'm not going to say anything. If you're doing it for other reasons, I do think it will probably be sensible to make sure that sexual compatibility is there.
Right.
Even if it's that you're compatibly sexual in the sense that you don't like fucking.
Right, okay.
You know what I mean? We're sexually compatible because we both only want to do it once a month.
Right.
Or, you know, so...
That's my worst life.
Me too. I think it's really important to establish those things. But also, I mean, there are many great marriages and relationships that are started off with having sex on the first night. But I also think for me and for a lot of people,
I understand,
it's not a good idea.
Yeah.
I think it's better to wait a little while
to
have sex just to build up that desire as well.
Yeah.
And just get to know
each other. I used to be really like argue with people on this a lot, but I get it a lot more now that I've dated as I've got older, because all of my relationships, like my long-term ones that I've had, so I'd say I've had two like long-term ones, and they were all sex straight away.
Yeah.
And then they ended up being my boyfriend. So it used to really annoy me when people used to constantly like push this narrative of like, you're never going to get a boyfriend if you shag him on the first date or, you know, whatever. Because I was like, no, because I think if you're both into each other and you're both there, then they're going to be there, you know?
Yeah,
So I used to really push back on this with people and be, you know, I'm not basically saying go be the town bike, but do you know what I mean? Yeah. I was like, don't beat yourself up if you have sex early on with someone and be like, they're going to hate me now. Because it's like, no, if they're not into you, they're not going to be into you if you wait 6 months. And then I feel like you've wasted your time.
Yeah.
You know, but then now I'd know exactly what you're saying in terms of there is a different type of desire that's built up when you date a bit and then you're like, ooh, no, I really want to have sex with him, but you still haven't, and it kind of builds this nice... So when you do get to it, it's like...
Yeah, exactly.
Do you know what I mean?
Exactly, and it doesn't even have to be a thing of like, I'm going to wait a month, I'm going to wait 3 dates or whatever.
Right.
Don't put that on it. Make it like, I'm going to wait until I'm really fucking excited and the chemistry is popping and I know this person and I feel a slight sense of trust, because you can't really trust people that much at that early on. But, you know, I feel like this person's going to keep me safe and whatever. Then I think that you're going to have the best sex, whether that's the second date or the 10th date.
Yeah.
But like you say, with the whole thing of like people saying, oh, nobody's going to take you seriously if you fuck on the first date, I also feel like, in a way, you can cut out the possibility of becoming not the town bike, because I would never agree.
Yeah.
But there are so many men that will reject women. They will talk a good talk, and they will get women into bed under the promise that they are sex positive and that they're mature.
Right.
And that they don't judge women for what they do. And then that woman will never hear from that man again. Or he will decide that he can't take her seriously because she fucked too early.
Yeah.
And so I
find that insane when men do that. You know, lure you into this false sense of security, being like, no, if you feel it,
we're both grown.
Yeah, like, I feel it. If you feel it, I feel it. And I'm like, all right, we're both feeling it then, come on.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden he's there with his mates going, yeah, nah, man, she's not worth material.
She fucked on the first night. You fucked on the first night too, you fucking dick.
Yes, in it. And I'm just like, I just think that is so cruel to do that.
It's so cruel. And that is in a way one of the reasons why I'm a bit like, don't too early.
Yeah.
Not because I'm judging you for doing that, but because I don't want you to give that. They don't deserve that vagina that you've just given them for them to now cast you off as some fucking unmarriable hoe.
Right. Right.
Fuck you.
Mm-hmm.
So I think waiting is a good idea for that reason as well.
I agree. I feel like I could speak to you for 3 hours.
I know. You're lovely to talk to. Yeah.
Oh my God, I'd love to get you back.
Yeah, of course.
Well, yeah, I mean, my dating life is this, so I will get you back. For sure. The next time I'm down bad, which will be in approximately 2 weeks. Thank you so much, Lala.
It's a pleasure.
What are your apps for the people?
It's at lalala, let me explain, on Instagram. And my podcast is available everywhere. It's not you, it's them, but it might be you.
I'm obsessed with that. That is so good.
And I do a weekly column with OK Magazine, an Agony Aunt column every Monday. And of course, my Sunday Times best-selling book, Block, Delete, Move On, available in all good bookstores.
Go cop that. She is amazing. Thank you so much for coming on.
Thank you for having me.
Like, comment, subscribe if you're watching. Leave me 5.